As we get to this story of Samson, it is a confusing story in a lot of ways. He's mentioned in Hebrews chapter 11 as being one of the heroes of faith, but as I read the life account of Samson, it's very difficult to understand exactly how he became such a great hero of the faith, other than the fact that at the end of his life it seems that he turned. But the image that you have of Samson at the very end of his life is that he is blinded, he's been beat down, and he's found himself in a horrible mess. And as he's there being ridiculed by these Philistines, and they're also, as a result, ridiculing his God, you can imagine that Samson is probably wondering, how did I find myself in this mess? You can think of a young girl who's unwed, who finds out she's pregnant, and she's at an abortion clinic. And you can imagine her mind being, how did I find myself in this mess? You can think of a husband and wife that they've had the last of 1,000 fights, and now they're talking about divorce and are discussing these things with a lawyer, and begin to wonder, how did I find myself in this mess? You have a Christian who's been a Christian for a very, very long period of time, and yet now they've got the elders of the congregation at their front door wanting to sit down with them because they're about to be marked for their unfaithfulness. And you can imagine them wondering, how did I find myself in this mess? You know, all of us are prone to having those times in our life where we find ourselves in a situation, in a predicament, in a mess. We don't know how we got there, and it's hard for us to find our way out of it. Samson, at the end of his life, found himself in such a situation. I'm looking forward to Sean's lesson tonight because it's going to be about being able to set our minds, set our affections on something that's higher than this earth. If we don't get that right, brethren, there's no way that we can ever make it to heaven. We have to set our priorities, we have to set our mind, we have to set our affections and get our heart right with God. But there are so many things that distract us that I don't think it's a coincidence that at the end of his life, Samson's eyes are put out. Because Samson is the kind of person that his entire life seems to be driven by what it is that he sees. And so it's appropriate for his eyes to be put out. And he needs to see what it is that God would have him to see, even if it is at the end of his life. And so let us begin this morning by talking about Samson. Samson was one of the judges of Israel. And it was in a time where the Philistines had oppressed the Israelites for a period of about 43 years. And one of the ways in which the Philistines had oppressed the Israelites during this time was because they forbid them from dealing with any type of iron. So any type of weapons that they may have had, anything they may possess that was made out of iron, it was wrong for them to have. And so it was kept from them. But when you think about how Samson's life began in chapter 13, one of the things you see about it was that his birth was actually announced by angels, by an angel. What's significant about that is that there's not a lot of births in the Bible that are announced by angels. You have Isaac. You have John the Baptist. You have Jesus. You also have Samson. But there's not very many. And one of the things I think that is significant about that is that he was actually put on this earth to be a judge. It wasn't that he was doing something else and then God chose him and made him a judge like some of the others. But Samson was actually born for the purpose of becoming a judge. That from birth he was selected by God to be a judge over Israel, to begin the process of delivering Israel from its oppression by the Philistines. He was really the only one of the judges that we could say such things about. But when you start thinking about his birth and the process of it, you remember that his mother is told that he's going to be a Nazarite from the womb. And so his own mother is supposed to keep, if you will, the Nazarite vow. Which if you look at those verses once again, Judges chapter 13 in verse 3, the angel of the Lord appeared to the woman and said, indeed, now you are barren and have borne no children, but you shall conceive and bear a son. Now therefore, please be careful. And I want you to pay attention to this because these things come into play several times in the life of Samson. But his mother is told to be careful not to drink wine or similar drink. In other words, anything that comes from the grape. And not to eat anything unclean. That would include things that maybe, if you already know the story, would include food that was inside the carcass of a dead animal. And also not to touch a dead animal. Don't eat anything unclean. For behold, you shall conceive and bear a son, and no razor. Again, this is one of the other things that concern Nazarites. the Nazarite vow. And no razor shall come upon his head, for the child shall be a Nazarite to God from the womb. He was set aside for this purpose. Those vows that were kept even by his mother were things that were to continue throughout the life, from birth to death, in the life of Samson. And they begin to play a role in many different ways. But as you go forward in the story of Samson, you see that at the end of chapter 13 and verse 25, Samson grows, but it also says that the Spirit of the Lord began to move upon him as he became an older man. But one of the things you see early, and this is the first encounter that we have of Samson himself, he marries a Philistine woman. He is to begin the process of eliminating the Philistines from their oppression over the Israelites. But instead of that, he actually goes to one of them and marries one of them. But notice what is said about the process of why this happened. Chapter 14, starting at verse 1. Samson went down to Timnah, and he saw a woman of Timnah, of the daughters of the Philistines. So he went up and told his father and mother, saying, I have seen a woman in Timnah of the daughters of the Philistines. Now for get her for me as a wife. Then his father, in verse 3, and mother said to him, is there no woman among the daughters of your brethren or among all my people that you must go and get a wife from the uncircumcised Philistines? And Samson said to his father, get her for me, because she's hot. That's basically what Samson said. She pleases me. She looks good. She's hot. That was Samson's criteria. Is there no woman among all the Israelites that you have to get a Philistine? Well, there's not one that looks as good as her. And that's what Samson's criteria was for marriage. Beware, young people, who you think about marrying. Use a different standard than what Samson did. Because Samson was willing to forsake his own people that he might have this woman who just looked good to him. He wanted her solely because of her looks. One of the things it says in verse 4 is, but his father and mother did not know that it was of the Lord, and that he was seeking an occasion to move against the Philistines. For at that time, the Philistines had dominion over Israel. That phrase, it was from the Lord. Some have taken it to mean that God wanted Samson to marry this Philistine. I don't think that's the meaning that's there. I don't think it's the relationship between Gomer, who was an adulteress. I think that this is God showing that he can use Samson in his holiness or his unrighteousness, and God can still use him. And I think that's the meaning that's there. God can use us, and God will use us. He will use all of us, whether we're being holy or whether we're being unholy, because God has addressed both topics and both subjects. And if we choose to do those things which God would have us to do, he can wrought his purposes by doing, through that righteous act, what he wants to have accomplished. If we choose to be unrighteous, he can show just how silly and despicable such a thing is, and both bring him glory. I think this is more along the lines of Habakkuk. Now, you remember that Habakkuk was one who was crying out to the Lord, saying, Lord, how long will you allow the wicked to suffer? How long will you allow your people to do all these things? And God basically tells Habakkuk, I'm going to deal with it. I'm sending in the Babylonians to take them captive. But then Habakkuk says, whoa, wait a minute. The Babylonians are actually worse than we are. And God says, yes, and I will show them to be what they are as well. God can use even the unrighteous to bring about the purpose that he wants. And I believe that's what he is doing with Samson in this particular story. But you remember that as he's traveling along to this Philistine woman, while he's traveling with his parents down to meet her, this is where you have the account where in verses 5 and 6 that a young lion jumps out and attacks them. Samson doesn't grab the lion in a chokehold and choke him unconscious and kill him, but he actually rips him apart. And this is one of those occasions where you see just how very strong Samson is, and you see the great strength that he has. Later, as they pass this way again, the honeybees have set up a nest inside of the carcass of this dead lion, and honey is there. So Samson goes and he eats some of the honey, breaking his Nazarite vow. But he eats some of the honey that's there, and he gives it to his parents, but he doesn't tell the parents where the honey came from, because they probably would have called him on that and said, you're not supposed to be having that. But here we see early in his life that Samson is one who's very, very strong, but he can't control himself. He wants to marry this Philistine woman just because of the way he looks, and honey because it's something that's sweet and he wants it, and so he eats it, even though it came from a place that was wrong. And that's why he didn't tell his parents where it came from. Also, this particular marriage to this woman ends violently. In Judges 14, notice verse 12. Samson says, let me pose a riddle to you. If you can correctly solve and explain it to me within 7 days of the feast," this is the marriage feast that he's having, "then I will give you 30 linen garments and 30 changes of clothing. But if you cannot explain it to me, then you shall give me 30 linen garments and 30 changes of clothing." And they said to him, "Pose your riddle that we may hear it." So he said, "Out of the eater came something to eat, and out of the strong came something sweet." For 3 days they could not explain the riddle. But it came to pass on the seventh day that they said to Samson's wife, "Entice your husband that he may explain the riddle to us, or else we will burn you and your father's house with fire. Have you invited us in order to take what is ours? Is that not so?" Then Samson's wife wept on him and said, "You only hate me. You do not love me. You have posed a riddle to the sons of my people, but you have not explained it to me." And notice this too. Men, ask yourself how good an argument this is. "I haven't explained it to my father or mother. Why should I explain it to you?" How far would that get you in your marriage? "Why should I explain it to you? I haven't told mom and daddy about it yet either." You align yourself with ungodly people, you find yourself with an ungodly companion. You seek a wife or a husband among the ungodly, you will have an ungodly companionship throughout your life. And these are the kinds of things that will happen. Because she goes and she tells her people. She doesn't tell Samson about the threat. She finds out the information about the riddle and tells her people that. Ungodly people have alliances with other ungodly people. And our spouses, if they are ungodly, will do the very same thing. And we have to be aware of that. Samson comes in and he knows why it is that they know the answer to the riddle now. He says, "Unless you'd been plowing with my heifer, you wouldn't know that." Again, men, not appropriate language to use with your wives, especially being Valentine's Day. But he knows how it is that they found out about this particular thing. And so he gets angry. He kills many of them. And he flees back to his homeland. He stalks home in anger. But later he does go back to his wife. But when he goes back, he finds out that she's been given to his best man. And again, Samson is angry about this very thing. And so he ties 150 pairs of foxes, 300 foxes, he ties them together and releases them through these harvested wheat fields with these firebrands, these torches on their tails, and burns these wheat fields. Now, this would have been a horrifying thing during that time because this is the people's livelihood and how they're going to survive. So he's not just damaging property. He's pretty much condemning some of them even to death by starvation because he's destroyed all of their food that they're going to have. And they're not going to be able to replant anytime soon. And so Samson is somebody who takes vengeance on these people. And it's in his anger that he does so. The Philistines, instead of getting Samson, they do indeed go back to the house of his wife and her father. And they burn that house to the ground. And they kill both of them. And so then Samson slaughters a number of the Philistines and then goes into hiding. That's in chapter 15, about verse 8. He went and dwelt in another land. Now while he is there, his own countrymen, and this is an interesting account as well, men of Judah find out that the Philistines are looking for Samson, and they become afraid. And they actually say, "Look, we're not going to kill you, but let us take you into custody and hand you over to the Philistines." It's interesting because when you look at the account of what is said in verse 11 of chapter 15, Judges 15, verse 11, "Then 3,000 men of Judah went down to the cleft of the rock of Edom, and said to Samson, 'Do you not know that the Philistines rule over us?'" That's interesting. Because in chapter 1 of Judges, you see that Judah is the tribe that's chosen by God to be the initial fighting force that goes in to drive out the Canaanites from the land. So the people of Judah, in a very short period of time, have went from being the ones who actually want to press the battle against the ungodly in the land to the ones who have now made peace with the idea that the Philistines are ruling over them. That's what happens when you don't pursue vigorously to rid your life of those things which God says to get your life rid of. You finally become comfortable with it being there. And that's what you see even with the men of Judah. Prior to Samson, they had cried out for deliverance, but now they had made peace with that situation. But notice the values that it is that Samson lives by. He breaks free from the bonds, and then he takes the jawbone of a donkey. And he kills 1,000 of the men. In verse 14, "When he came to Lehi, the Philistines came shouting against him. Then the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him, and the ropes that were on his arms became like flax that is burned with fire, and his bonds broke loose from his hands. He found a fresh jawbone of a donkey, again breaking his Nazarite vow, though, in touching a dead animal. He reached out his hand and took it and killed 1,000 men with it. And it was all because of what they had done to him earlier. And he felt justified in doing that very thing. Now, he does kill many of the Philistines as a result. It's from that point on that you see that Samson spends about 20 years. This is where he actually starts judging Israel. And that goes on for about 20 years. And it almost seems as if, because of what had happened, that maybe Samson had calmed down a little bit. He's probably in his late 30s now, maybe early 40s. But maybe he's calmed down by this point. Maybe he's learned his lesson by this point. Maybe he's going to be better at this point. But then the next time that you read about Samson is that he is in Gaza. And there he finds a harlot. And he goes into her. Gaza, again, being a town of the Philistines. They know he's there. They try to capture him by closing the gates of the city because Samson is there. But he takes the gate, he pulls it up, and takes it several miles, just carrying it, almost in a mockery, and again showing his great strength. But again, Samson finds himself with a Philistine harlot. So on two occasions, he's got trouble with the Philistines, especially among the women. Then we meet the notorious Delilah. Because after it happened, this is verse 4 of chapter 16, after it happened that he loved a woman in the valley of Sorek whose name was Delilah. Most Bible commentators believe, and scholars believe, that Delilah was actually a harlot herself, and that she was most likely a Philistine. I find no reason to think differently either. But she is offered a tremendous amount of money to entrap Samson. It equates to about $700,000 in today's time. That's how much she's offered. And so she does go to Samson. She doesn't hide her motives. She goes to him and she says in verse 6, Delilah says to Samson, please tell me where your great strength lies. And men, pay attention to this. And with what you may be bound to afflict you. So if you're dating a woman and she says, how did you get to be so strong? And how can I really hurt you? But Samson's not upset about that. He tells her a story about what can happen. Samson, the Philistines are upon you. He wakes from his sleep. He breaks loose. Then she plays that card where she says, if you really loved me, right? Because he's going to tell her three stories. The first two she knows are wrong because she says, the Philistines are upon you. She's been honest. With what can we afflict you, Samson? How can we rob you of your strength? And he thinks it's a mockery. He thinks it's some game. And he enjoys playing it, it seems. But then she says, if you really loved me. Young people, be careful about that phrase. It will be used against you if you're not careful. Some young man that tells you in the backseat of a car, if you really loved me, is not someone who has your best interest at heart. A person who tries to take advantage of you in any shape, form, or fashion by using the phrase, if you really loved me, is not someone you should even be spending time with. Beware. If you want to know how many people find themselves in a mess, that's how they find themselves in a mess, is by falling prey to such tactics as that. But it is after this that Samson does reveal his secret to her. How can you say, verse 15 says, you love me when your heart is not with me? You have mocked me these three times and have not told me your great strength lies. And it came to pass when she pestered him daily with her words and pressed him so that his soul was vexed to death, that he told her all his heart and said to her, no razor has ever come upon my head, for I have been a Nazarite to God from my mother's womb. If I am shaven, then my strength will leave me, and I shall become weak and be like any other man. And so the very vows that Samson was supposed to keep from the time of his birth. He wasn't to drink strong drink. Most likely at his wedding, though we're not told specifically, but most likely at his wedding, there was drink that he shouldn't have been drinking. He was not supposed to touch an unclean thing or eat unclean things. He's eating from a lion's carcass and taking the jawbone of a donkey. And he's not to have his hair cut. And now he tells Delilah that his hair is going to be cut. The thing about it is, Samson says, the secret of my strength lies in my hair. That's not where the secret of his strength actually came from. The secret of Samson's strength came from obedience to God. And at this time, when he says, if you cut my hair, then I become just like any other man, he was exactly right. He became just like any other disobedient man to God. The transformation was complete. And he became just like everyone else, including the Philistines. And because of that, he was destroyed as a result. He found himself in a mess because he was willing to forsake his vow over and over and over again. And finally, in the end, he was willing to become just like everyone else. Because she pestered him daily about it. And she said, you don't really love me. And he gave up the secret of his strength. God had delivered Samson over and over and over again from all the problems and difficulties that he had had. But God's grace and patience had run out. Samson said, I will be delivered just like other times. And he took for granted that God was just going to forgive and allow these things to happen just like every other time. But he didn't. Again, beware. You may have gotten away with it numerous times. But sooner or later, God has had enough. And if you want to be just like everyone else, sooner or later God's going to say, fine, you can be just like everyone else. It's a tragic lesson, and one that we are slow to learn. Samson does not get delivered at this time, but he's taken into custody. His eyes are put out. He is there at the temple when they're worshiping their god Dagon. And he's led up to these pillars where thousands, 3,000 plus, are there, especially among the nobles and the kings. They're mocking Samson because they've had him out there like a common animal grinding grain. And a young lad has to put his hands on these pillars for support. And he prays to God and he says, God, give me my strength one more time that I might avenge my two eyes. God grants him strength. Samson pushes the pillars apart and the whole thing comes down upon him and 3,000 plus other of the Philistines. And in his death, Samson kills more than he did in his life. There's a lot that we can learn from the story of Samson. Titus 2, 11 and 12, I think is an appropriate verse to think about. Titus 2, 11 and 12 says, for the grace of God that brings salvation has appeared to all men, teaching us that denying ungodliness and worldly lust, we should live soberly, righteously, and godly in this present age. You know, the way that God saves us is by waking us up to what is truly in the world. And we have to be humbled to it. He tells us that in this world that we're living in, there's ungodliness, there's worldly lust, there's drunkenness in this world that we live in. But we are to be, in the midst of this world, living soberly, righteously, and godly in this present age. But you have to wake up to the world that you live in. And many times we have to be humbled enough to see it, which means we have to be blinded to the things of this world that we want to have so that we can see the things which God would have us to see. And until we are actually humbled by those things, many times we don't learn our lesson because we've gotten away with it so often. We live in a household with our families, and our parents try to tell us when we're young, don't hang around with those kinds of people, and we hang around with those kinds of people. They tell us, don't date that kind of person. We date that kind of person. We're told, don't watch that kind of movie. Don't listen to that kind of music. Don't read that kind of book. And what do? We listen to that kind of music. We watch those kinds of movies. We read those kinds of books. And then all of a sudden, we find ourselves in a mess where we don't have a family anymore because our wife has left us or our husband has left us. Our own children now, the grandchildren of your parents, are not faithful. And we say, what happened? What happened? You know what happened? You didn't listen to sensibility when you were living at home. That's what happened. And what happens with our parents? They try to reason with us. They try to tell us all the reasons that we shouldn't do these things, but they never step in and forbid it. And like Samson, we have an attitude, I'm going to do what I want to do because I don't like to be told what to do. Doesn't matter if you like to be told what to do. If Samson had been told what to do, maybe he wouldn't have ended up where he ended up. Because you are kept by a vow. You are kept by a promise to God. Your parents have stewardship over you, and a promise has been made. And which of us did not stand in front of an audience of people and say that I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God? And we have made a vow that we are expected to keep. And like Samson, if we don't, we find ourselves in the same kinds of predicaments over and over and over again. But it doesn't happen all at once. It happens with little compromises along the way. And so if you look at your past, if you look at your life, and you think about the path that it's taken, you've been making compromises? Small as they may be. There's a lot of good things you're doing. There's a lot of things you haven't forsaken. But are you making compromises? Like eating honey from the carcass of a lion. Little compromises. Does it really hurt anything? You make little compromises along the way. And before you know it, you look like everyone else. And you are just like everyone else. We have to be careful. Samson knew who he was, but he chose to ignore that. And I think one of the reasons why it happens so gradually is because there may not be any real devastating consequences in the immediate. And nothing happens dramatically. And what happens is that God's Spirit has been given to you. That you know the Word of God. You know the truth. But you're going to find yourself one day, if you keep compromising, you're going to find yourself one day where you're going to think, God can deliver me again. And you're going to search for strength, and you're not going to find it. Because God has left you, just like He did with Samson. So we can't be compromising. The grace of God has taught us to deny ungodliness, worldly lust. James 4, verses 4 through 10 is another passage I think is important. Adulterers and adulteresses, do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? Whoever therefore wants to be a friend of this world makes himself an enemy of God. Or do you think that the Scripture says in vain, the Spirit who dwells in us yearns jealously, but He gives more grace? Therefore He says, God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Therefore submit to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw near to God, and He will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. Lament and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning and your joy to gloom. Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and He will lift you up. One of the things that we should learn is you cannot have it both ways. You cannot have it both ways. You cannot live among the Philistines. You can't date the Philistines. You can't marry the Philistines. And you can't go to the Philistines' parties. You can't play the games with the Philistines. And you can't live in the cities of the Philistines. Because one day payment is coming due. And so we are not to be those people who are dating, marrying, going to the parties, playing the games, living in the cities of the ungodly. Because, brethren, one day payment is coming due. How do you find yourself in a mess? That's how you find yourself in a mess. And it all began because, look good to me. It's what I want. And so that's what I'm going to get. You can't have it both ways. Samson knew who he was, but after a while he got tired of it. And you remember when he was speaking with Delilah, it vexed him daily. Look, just cut my hair and I'll be like everyone else. Because it became a burden to him. It was an annoying way to live like a Nazarite. It was annoying. It kept him from the woman that he wanted, the food that he wanted, the things he wanted to touch, and the places he wanted to live. And so it was annoying to be a Nazarite. You ever felt that way? It's annoying to live as a Christian because you can't date the women that you want to date. You can't marry the women you want to date. You can't go the places you want to go. You can't eat and drink the things that you want to eat and drink. You can't live the places you want to live. You can't take the jobs that you'd want to take. And pretty soon you get so annoyed by it, you just give it up and say, look, just cut my hair. Just cut it off. I just want to be like everyone else. Payment's coming due for such a lifestyle as those things. And so that's the question is, who's your Delilah? What's your Delilah? And so let's think about some of the lessons we're to learn. One of them is that we need to beware of an I'll do what I want to do type of attitude. If there's one attitude that I've seen that has destroyed more Christians than any other, it's that one. I'm going to do what I want to do. And we all know it's true because that's what we all do. We all do what we want to do. But beware of it. We're told in the book of Proverbs, Proverbs chapter 5 and verse 22. If you turn there with me, Proverbs 5. Starting at verse 22. His own iniquities entrap the wicked man, and he is caught in the cords of his sin. He shall die for lack of instruction, and in the greatness of his folly he shall go astray. His stubborn heart of lack of self-control is what got him into trouble. He had many people who tried to warn him, and he didn't listen. Another lesson we can learn is that our companions are the ones who define our future. 2 Corinthians 6, verse 14 says, do not be unequally yoked together with the unbeliever. Do not be unequally yoked together with the unbeliever. What part have they with God? What fellowship do they have with God? If you want to know what your future is going to look like, marry an unbeliever. It's going to look like an unbeliever's life. And you're going to have problems. You're going to have trouble. Because the loyalties are divided. And what house can stand when there's two masters? So don't be unequally yoked together with the unbelievers. Choose wisely who it will be that you will make as your companion. Samson was not going to find the sort of person he needed that would help him go to heaven among the Philistines, and neither will you. We are expected to maintain our holiness in this world. Philippians 2 verse 15 says that we shine as lights in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation. Do you? That's who we're supposed to be. And God expects us to be holy and righteous and to be forthright and to be those people who shine as lights in the midst of the world that we live in. And He has directed us on how it is that we are supposed to live. We also learn from the life of Samson that we ought to strive to utilize our talents and our abilities for God's purposes. One of the things you see in Judges 16, verse 28 is at the end of his life, Samson says once again, Lord, give me back my strength just this one more time that I might glorify and exalt your high and holy name. No. That I might take vengeance for my eyes. Too often what happens is we'll utilize our talents and our abilities, the things that we can do, so long as it's what I want from it. Your talents and your abilities have been given to you by God as a gift, as a grace. And you have stewardship over them. And if you're not using them for the glory of God, you're falling short. It is not meant so that you might feel good and you might feel comfortable. It's that our God might be glorified as a result. Am I using it for that purpose? We're told in 1 Peter 4, verses 10 and 11, that the gifts that we have, the abilities that we have, they've been given to us by God. Use them that God might be glorified and exalted as a result. Also, and lastly, beware of presumptuousness. There are many who are going to say to Jesus on that day that they knew Him and had done all these wonderful works, and Jesus is going to say, I never knew you, because they act presumptuously. And the reason that this was so terrifying and should be terrifying to us is that God did not step in anywhere along the way with these people and just smite them dead. He didn't cause something devastating to happen in their life to where they could all of a sudden wake up and see these things for what they truly were. God allowed them to keep pursuing what they wanted to pursue. Don't be so presumptuous to think that just because nothing bad has happened to you so far, that nothing bad is going to happen to you in the future. Samson thought that he would get up and go out just as he did at other times. But God no longer knew Samson because he was just like every other man. Don't presume that you're always going to be able to get up. We're told in the book of 1 John, in that short letter, chapter 2, verses 15 through 17, that we are to not love the world or the things in the world. The lust of the eye, the lust of the flesh, and the pride of life. The only way that we know what it is that we should be doing, and the only safe way to secure our way to heaven, is by actually doing what the Word tells us to do, to abstain from those things. Proverbs 3, 11 and 12 says, do not despise the chastening of the Lord. For whom the Lord loves, He chastens, as a father with his son. The Hebrew writer quotes this in the book of Hebrews chapter 12 and says, you know what, you've forgotten this. Let the word chasten, direct, correct. Brethren, let the word hurt you from time to time. Allow the word of God to actually hurt you from time to time. We need to be chastened from time to time. And let the word correct us along the way. So the question I want to leave with you is, will you be stronger than Samson? There's a lot of lessons that we can learn from his life, and I hope these have been beneficial to you. But most of all, let us learn not to make the same mistakes he did. Let us be wiser. Let us be stronger. Don't give in, but practice self-control and holiness in this world that we live in. This morning, if you're not a Christian, you have an opportunity. There may be many invitations you've heard before, but if you have not yet responded, and you know that you need to, if you need to repent of sin, if you need to put on Christ in baptism, whatever that may be, if we can help you in any way, won't you please let us know as we stand and sing this song.